Today's podcast is a little bit different from what we've normally done. These are taken from live recordings, which have been held in Bournemouth with a number of different guests, exploring different aspects of digital technology and how that impacts business and what some of the advantages might be for companies to be able to use some of the latest technology. The events were put together by Silicon South, and they were supported by BCP Council, so a big thanks to them as they provided the money to fund the events. So hope you enjoy them, and let's get going with the first one. So thanks to BCP Council, who funded the events, and I hope you enjoy it. Lovely. Hello, everybody. Welcome very much to coming on to this evening. Sorry we're a few minutes delayed. As ever, this is a live technical thing, and there's always a couple of things to sort out at the end, not least making sure that all of the guests have got some water. Happily, that is. So look, thank you so much for coming along today. Just to say that this is, we've got lots to talk about. I've met everyone here before, and I know they're not shy of talking amongst themselves and with people. So, but that this is as relevant as possible. So if you've got questions, please do put them in the chat. I will do my best to pick them up as we go through. And if there's anything specific you want to ask about your own business, or if there's something you'd like to try and expand on, please do put a message in there and we will do our best to pick that up and address them directly. So I've got myself muted, but I can in fact see the chat on the screen here, even though you can't see me through this device. I'm on that device. So, brilliant. This is the third installment of a series that we've been running about how digital and digital technology is enabling more efficient and more effective ways of working. Today, we're really focusing on what businesses can do to improve the connection that they have with customers and therefore how that leads on into improving sales. And we want to make sure that that's relevant for everybody. In fact, the kind of the themes we're going to be looking at are addressable for across all sectors, but today we're specifically and especially looking directly at some sectors which have been hit particularly hard in recent times over the past 2 years, especially around retail, shops, cafes and restaurants. Now, it's pretty clear that there have been 2 years of pandemic that we are hopefully emerging out of. All the signs looking positive so far, but together with the lockdowns, those impacts have been pretty major, pretty catastrophic for a lot of businesses, and it's been very, very hard to try and push through that, certainly with a sense of humour. And not only that, but even before this was starting, that there were impacts on the high streets. Certainly there have been drops in footfall. And together with the impacts of the pandemic as well, what this is leading into is obviously there's an increase in the way that people are buying online. And we see, you know, there's been a great advantage of the likes of Amazon and other companies who have a sort of slightly laissez-faire attitude towards paying taxes locally, let's say. There's also been a kind of big increase in terms of takeaway foods. And we have the likes of Deliveroo and Just Eat, who have been doing phenomenally well out of this. A lot of people staying at home, ordering at home, and getting used to that being the new dynamic. And just when you think, that's okay, there's another kick in the teeth from the likes of HelloFresh and Wizzr, and I came across Be Delivery today, who are promising to either have healthy food delivered to the door or groceries which can be delivered within 15 minutes to an hour. So all of those things are just putting more and more pressure onto the footfall, which is actually happening live in the streets. So I think what this shows is that the actual shops, the bricks and mortar, are amazing. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but it's a pretty intense example of an industry which is facing unprecedented competition. Now, in another of our sessions, we had a leadership expert called Paul Kincaid, and he lighted the concept called VUCA. It's not a skin rash, but the conditions, it actually describes the conditions which you face in warfare. He's an ex-lieutenant colonel. So VUCA stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And those are all conditions which happen in the theatre of war. But a market doesn't normally face all of those things all at the same time. But certainly at the moment, we've had some very volatile conditions. We've had a lot of uncertainty which has been going along. How to navigate this has certainly been very complex, and the solutions are being incredibly ambiguous. So this is very much the situation which we're in, and it's just not something that happens all the time. So, I mean, I don't want to pour petrol onto the fire, but again, just as we're thinking, can we cope with this? You know, then the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which is a travesty in itself, but the impact that's going to have on the global economies and how that trickles down, and we're seeing the impact on fuel already. You know, it's yet another thing that we have to contend with. So, I think we can safely say the odds have been stacked against this sector in particular, and a lot of other people too. But all is not lost. There are a lot of measures which can be taken. Another thing that the Lieutenant Colonel Paul had talked about was hyperconnectivity. So we are connected in a way which has never happened before. Now this can be a curse, and you know, the Just Eat and Amazon and HelloFresh examples are competition which has happened. But it's also an opportunity as well. And they give us ways in which we can try and improve and try and compete for ourselves. So I have three guests who are perfectly poised to start talking about these things. To my left, we have Jamie. Jamie Derrick is the founder and the solutions architect at Bournemouth-based e-commerce specialist development agency called JD E-Commerce. They design, build, and optimize world-class e-commerce websites. You've got specialist areas around Shopify, WordPress, and headless platforms. I'm not quite sure what a headless platform is. Is that just any kind of thing you happen to want to take on at any time?
I guess it's quite a technical thing, really. It's where the CMS is separated from the front end. And
okay, good. Well, that's what everyone wanted to hear. That's the main thing. and topically, actually, JD have a very long history of working with developers in Ukraine.
We do.
So our thoughts go out to them, especially at the moment.
Very much so.
Jamie's been in touch with quite a few of the people, and it's eye-opening. So anyway,
yeah,
best go out to them. Let me move on to Mark at the end. So Mark Masters is the founder of the ID Group. They're an agency that specializes in content marketing. He's also the founder of You Are the Media Community in Bournemouth. Now, through these ventures, he's been working as a specialist in content marketing for a number of years. And he's somebody who I'd say wears his brand on his sleeve and sits in the heart of his own marketing strategies and lives, breathes sharing media and being part of that story. So what we're going to do is to dive into what that really means, what content media is, and how that can support and develop new ideas. And Emma Jones is a self-confessed social media geek with an extensive background in relationship management. So she's the head of training at South Coast Social, social media experts, which are based in Bournemouth. Her passion is in learning and development. So as well as managing clients' social media platforms, she also spends a lot of time delivering bespoke social media workshops, either here in Dorset or further afield in the likes of London. So that's quite a long preamble. Hopefully that kind of gives you a little bit of context. I'm sure you know a lot of this yourself because a lot of you are experiencing this for yourself as well. So why don't we just start with some basics about how we tackle this. Jamie, why don't I start with you? So I think, you know, we've talked about footfall on the high street, the impact on the high street. So there are alternative worlds of which, you know, you've been very involved with over the past few years. So you've seen a lot of migration towards online environments. I was just interested by starting that when someone takes a decision going, right, I really need to focus more and more online, do people come to you going, right, I've got a very clear idea of what I want to do, or is it a little bit more nebulous than that and actually you need to help people to understand why they might want to do this and what they can try and get from it?
So it's not normally that clear cut. What we normally find is people come to us where they are kind of at the beginning of their journey to go online, to take their store online. And typically we see clients who have already got themselves online using generally Shopify, and they've kind of got to the point where they just don't really know where to go next. They've kind of like hit their wall of what they're capable of doing themselves.
Okay. And so what does that mean for you? So you're coming into that situation, and what I suppose I'm just interested in the ideas that you bring of what it is that people ought to be thinking about early on. And by the way, if you guys have got questions as well, this should be a conversation, not just me spouting, so please feel free to chip in and let's have a proper discussion.
So quite often, a lot of the stuff that we get involved in is what's called conversion rate optimization. So making the most of the traffic that comes to your e-commerce website. And I think really one of the things that I like to think about when it comes to sort of local businesses that are both online and bricks and mortar as well, is not so much about kind of finding new customers, but making the most of their existing customers. So it's giving an extra channel that their existing customers can kind of reach them through and buy through as well.
Is that because the relationship you have with an established customer is perhaps their habits are changing, so they might be slightly less prone to, they might be used to coming down to see you in the high street and going, oh, I don't want to do that, but you still want to maintain the relationship because they still trust you, invest in you, particularly kind of for local businesses, there's a trust in place, and it's about making sure there's still a corridor that you can continue that relationship with?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the way I like to think about it really is if you're going to buy something and it's a similar price, even sort of slightly more expensive on the high street, the way that people tend to buy stuff now is more they know what they want to buy, and then they'll go and buy it, and they'll buy it online, or they'll do maybe say click and collect. So if you've got an online store that complements your existing store, and you give people the convenience of being able to buy it possibly slightly more, then people will take that option because of the fact that it's so much more convenient, and they know that they're supporting a local business as well.
It's kind of interesting that. It's quite odd, isn't it? The fact is that, hold on, I'm going to go to the local store anyway to pick up my purchase, but I still want to buy it in advance. Is it just because you know that you can, it means you can remove any doubt about whether it's in stock or whether the shop's going to be open? Or do you have anything into the psychology behind that?
I think you're kind of onto it there a little bit. And I think it is just down to, it's people's habits now. People don't really seem to go to the high street almost as a shopping activity as much as they used to. People will have the things that they want to buy, that they need to, that they know they want to buy. They want to be able to browse it conveniently online, and then they want to be able to pick it up conveniently as well.
Yeah. So there's still a sense that people want to be in the high street, but maybe for a slightly different reason. That there's still the kind of the cafe culture that people seem to be investing in. I mean, I think that's certainly picking up a little bit more since we've been allowed out. There's a lot of very full cafes around.
I'd probably pick up on that, where the reason that we go out, here's a good example of something recently and on the doorstep. And you go to places because you care. So here's a good little local example. So it was in the paper the other week with Waterstones that were shutting in Poole. By the way, where do I look? Do I look at that? Or do I look at you? Where do I go?
Well, look wherever you want.
Where do I want to go, Josh? Where do I look at?
Yeah.
Well said.
Don't break that fourth wall.
Yeah.
Paul, Waterstones were shutting, yeah? So me and my family will go out, and for my two girls, we will normally go there and buy books for them. Because it's that lovely little intimacy. You always hear the stories of the staff that work in the bookshop are there and welcome in and extend someone's learning beyond what they will see in the library and go into these different paths, whether they like the different books that they like to read. So Waterstones is shutting. So I think I must have tweeted that, picked up on it, about the fact that Waterstones was shut in a few weeks ago. So everyone's good friend, Gordon Fong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gordon.
So Gordon said, well, come to Southbourne because we have BH6. And this is the kicker. Mm-hmm. So Gordon will always go there. He will never go to Amazon. He will go there, ask for the book, and he's happy to pay an extra couple of pounds. And from my side of my family, someone had put the little bat signal out who had vouched for somebody else, BH6. I was familiar with Gordon. And so when me and my family went there, there is that new experience. Mm-hmm. So the reason that to go back into these places is because we care. And so now is a rallying call for the independents, the smaller shops themselves, because that's, we're all fighting for our lives.
Yeah.
So if somebody's saying, if we don't go to the bookshop,
yeah,
then they're going to be gone. And so from our own childhood, so there is that association by going to places because you care.
Yeah.
And so the customer service is still the same, but it feels nice that there's only one B86.
Yeah.
But there's 10 to the dozen Waterstones around the country.
So let's see how we tap into that. Oh, just one thing. Careful with your hand, because if you're hitting the table,
I'm then sorry, it's running going through the mic. You're ruining it, aren't I?
I know. We're going to have to edit that out before we know it. So look, so in terms of having that sort of two-tiered approach, then what's the relationship? If you are, I mean, you know, particularly here, and the people who are part of the Coastal Bid are on the whole sole operators. They've got a single venue, maybe a couple. What's that relationship between an online presence and an offline presence, and where do you put your focus? How does that work?
Well, I think the thing that I'd quite like to pick up on is you know, what you've said there, Mark, is absolutely dead on. And I think the thing that I really like to point out there is if you've got a book that you want to buy and you really want that book, and you want it, say, tomorrow, and you've got the choice of either buying it, it's BH6, yeah? You've got a choice of buying it at BH6, possibly even a few pounds more expensive, or at Amazon. At Amazon, you get it tomorrow, or you can get it at BH6, you do a click and collect and you get it today, maybe even tomorrow, but you know that you're supporting that local company as well. I think that's generally the option that people would take.
Yeah. I'm promoting BH6 on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there'll be more to come. In fact, speaking of which, I want to ask you, just as an example, to give us an example. So I'm interested in that whole thing of then, okay, here we are. We are a physical presence and we want to do something different. And I know you've done a lot of work with the Tank Museum.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a place that people go to. But they've actually been phenomenally successful in trying to explore their online presence. And part of that has been around e-commerce.
Yeah.
Part of that has been around content. So we're going to talk to that. And part of that has been about promoting themselves and social.
Very
so
much.
I'm going to cover all of this.
Yeah.
But just from that point in terms of the e-commerce, how's that? What's the kind of the mindset? What's the relationship and that you have between, you know, thinking and operating as a physical place into actually we need to make the most of this online opportunity?
Well, I think with the Tank Museum is such a great example. But if you think about it, most people that go to the Tank Museum, it's and people that don't live in Dorset, and you know, most of the country don't live in Dorset, but the Tank Museum is a great draw. People go to the Tank Museum, and that traditionally was their only kind of opportunity to buy some tank slippers or any of the other wonderful things that they sell.
Okay.
And but now with the online store, they've got that constant kind of connection to them the whole time.
Yeah.
They can order throughout the year. And it turns out that people that are into tanks will buy anything to do with tanks. So, and that also does keep... It works in multiple directions as well, because the fact that they keep on buying stuff on the online store means that they're in constant contact with the Tank Museum. They constantly... They're drawn to come back to the Tank Museum, to be involved with the Tank Museum, to donate in certain ways. And, of course, buying stuff from the store donates as well.
Yeah.
So there's a really good kind of... It works both ways. And also people that go to the Tank Museum for the first time, they then find out about the online store, and then they go away and then they continue to be a customer.
So actually, you kind of have a customer relationship you wouldn't have otherwise. Can I just ask, let's come back to BH6 and a kind of a more traditional shop.
Why not?
Then if you, and we'll come back to it a lot, kind of day after day, because that's where the best shops, the best books are. Are you on commission? No problem. So if you have all of your stock, and presumably you have like a stock management system for most places will do that, does that get echoed? I mean, just look at the kind of the actual practicality of it. Is that echoed through Shopify, through your e-commerce store? How do you make sure that you are, if somebody is buying something online, you actually do have it on stock? Well, how does that physically work?
There's two different ways you can do that. You can either use Shopify as your full inventory system.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll get a little bit technical here. But if you've got multiple locations, say multiple shops, you can then have multiple inventory locations set up in Shopify, and you can set which one sells, which one is used for each unit for online.
Yeah.
But you can also, if you've got a separate system that you use for your inventory management, you can set up an app which then basically synchronizes them, which is something we've done recently with Sage 50 actually, which I know is quite often used in smaller businesses.
Okay. And then, and I suppose the other thing which is interesting is in terms of how you can match those sales to individuals, so you can start to, so if you just have stock inventory, you just know that you've lost something, you need to replace it.
Yeah.
If you're doing that through something like Shopify, then presumably you go, we've lost something, but we've lost something to Mrs. Jones.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, and Mrs. Jones has also bought this. So yep. is that capability something which is prevalent? Because it'll come into you know, some of the stuff that you do in social media as well. I'm so interested, as a starting point, how much profile are you able to build up around your customers?
So Shopify has some really, really good insights built into it. Obviously, something more complicated and fully featured like Google Analytics is going to be better, but it's more complicated. In Shopify, it comes up with insights of things that it says. This product, every time someone lands on this product, 75% of people buy it, but you're only getting a tiny bit of traffic. Send more traffic to it. You know, it comes up with these really, really good things. But the really interesting thing, I think, that might be considered for, say, a smaller retailer, a traditional retailer, is that if they set up an online store, because they then have that data available to them, they can use that data and apply it to the bricks and mortar store as well. So because they've now got this data of, say, you know, you can start to build up demographics of your audience and what sells best to who, you can then look at your own kind of like actual bricks and mortar store and go, hang on a second, it turns out that my shop is actually, my main products are actually really popular with customers I'd never considered before. Mm. So you can then start appealing to them in real life because you've gathered that data online.
So you can kind of maybe change the emphasis of how you present the shop or the brand or the, is it that sort of thing? And just in terms of how you appeal to people, you just have a better idea of who your customers really are as opposed to that sort of confirmation bias of who you think they might be.
Well, exactly. I guess in the simplest term, it might turn out that your best seller in the online store is a product which you had just sitting gathering dust on in a shelf in the back room.
Okay.
And then you think, hang on a second, and you buy loads of them in, put them at the front, and then they suddenly sell out.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
That's just a hypothetical. I'm not guaranteeing that's going to happen.
So dust down your dusty product, put it in the front window, and it'll sell like hotcakes. Yeah. Jamie's top tip. But that kind of feeds into what happens with social as well, because you can start building a huge amount of data through social media. And where do you think the kind of a good starting point is? So, I mean, I'm sort of interested in something like Facebook, with reservations in terms of the limits of my interest, but you know, or Meta.
No,
let's say
you're more into TikTok, aren't you?
I'm all over TikTok, obviously. If you look at something like Facebook, I'm fascinated by how much data that there is on Facebook, and
yes.
it's terrifying amounts almost if you're a cynic about this. But otherwise, or it's a opportunistically huge amounts of data that you can start to get. So can you just tell me a little bit in terms of what you ought to be doing with that and how you can feed that into the sort of thing that Jamie's talking about to try and, I guess, get a better understanding of who's actually interested in what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as you say, that people have a confirmation bias on who they believe their customer is. And it may be that you have several different demographics of customer that are visiting you regularly and buying with you. So I would always say start with your content going out, talking to your customer. At the end of the day, we cannot be everything for everyone, and we shouldn't try to be. You should just be trying to focus on who your customer is going to be. So start with your content being planned out, so you're talking to that group of people. And then use the Facebook Insights, which is, you know, the Insights tab on your Facebook, on your business page. And have a look, the demographic that goes down quite a way. What I would say is have a look at it once and then maybe go back to it 2 weeks later and then make sure that you're touching back to that maybe once every fortnight or every month to make sure that nothing's changed wildly.
So let's pretend for a second that I didn't know what Facebook Insights was all about, because obviously I clearly do. but what is, tell me a little bit about Facebook Insights. How does that, what does that mean? What sort of insights are you actually getting through that?
So the insights that you get through Facebook is essentially when your audience are online, how much they're engaging with you. You can break down what have been your most engaged with posts in the last month or week. And you can also see the demographic of audience that's engaging with you. So is it that you've got 75% female that are aged between, you know, 24 and 34 and they're based in Bournemouth? So it will go down quite a way and okay. you can have a look at that. But yeah, I always think it's always good, make sure you're engaging with the people that are engaging with you. Make sure you're talking to people. It is social media.
Yeah.
So make sure you're talking to people and use the insights tab. So this will be where Facebook is trying to support you as a business to show you what's happening with what you're doing. To sort of use that as the base for your content pillars for what you're putting out.
Because they say it takes something like 17 points of engagement before you can successfully have a sale. I mean, sometimes it's going to be quicker, sometimes it's going to be longer, but let's say that's an average. So if that's what you're trying to achieve, you need to have 17 elements of interaction and engagement with the individual people. How do you start thinking about a strategy to do that? Where's a good starting point of going, right, I want to do that, and you can use insights to kind of understand who those people are, but where's the starting point for this?
So one of the things I really like about Facebook is the Facebook groups. So I don't know how many of us joined a community group during lockdown. I know I'm part of quite a few now. That's the key difference I saw between the beginning of the pandemic to where we are now are there's some very active communities on Facebook. So make sure that you're part of those and that you're contributing. It is, you will need to have a various amount of touch points with your audience or your customer before they come in and put money over the till.
Mm-hmm.
But make sure that you're interacting with them because that will really help. Anything that builds on people knowing you, liking you, and trusting you. Have I just banged too hard on the table? Is it okay?
That's all right, it's okay.
It's like a mini mark.
Yeah, no, it wasn't full mark.
I didn't go full mark on it. Build on the know, like, and trust with the people that you want to interact with.
Yep.
And as I said before, social media is designed to be social. And the first almost trip I see with a lot of people is they put posts out and they forget to sort of talk back.
Well, that's interesting.
And if, you know, I always use a party analogy. If you went to a party and you just spoke about yourself, what you'll find is the people around you will start edging away because we like to have conversations just like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
To make sure that when people are engaging with you, that you are engaging back. If they comment, make sure you're commenting back. Thank you for their contribution. If someone recommends you in a group, if someone says, you know, where's the best place to go in Southbourne to go and buy books? And someone says, you know, BH6, thank you so much. Thank you for recommending us. It really helps to reinforce yourself as a brand, especially in the local area and especially on the Facebook groups.
Okay. So given Facebook is just one of the platforms, where would you suggest for the sort of sectors that we're talking about? You know, you've got TikTok and Instagram and Twitter and where do you
there's
think
there's so many aren't there
so more and more Pinterest is sort of seems
Pinterest is if you're an e-commerce brand then Pinterest is definitely something you should be looking at because it's definitely evolving. We talked about this earlier over the last 12 months it's to have a more social aspect to it. There's now stories on Pinterest and you can see more tutorials on Pinterest than you would have done before.
Tutorials about what sort of
like using the product, how you would set up a product.
Okay.
That works really well. So any kind of e-commerce, I would heavily recommend Pinterest. TikTok, you don't have to go on and learn a dance. Everyone's scared because they don't know the dance moves yet. Don't worry. I don't. TikTok is brilliant. Like I say, for tutorials, for short storytelling, works really well. Interestingly enough, TikTok are going to start lengthening the format of the videos. So they're very short form videos at the moment.
Yeah. So at the moment, you're saying how, if you're saying you're doing a tutorial on TikTok, how long would that last?
So most of them last at around 60 seconds that you see on TikTok, the ones that are most engaged with because it's a quick hook. TikTok is designed to kind of steal your focus and keep you in the platform as long as possible. I mean, all the platforms are. But it wants to keep the thumb sort of scrolling. You can sit down with TikTok and then an hour later you're still on TikTok and you've done nothing. Didn't get anything done. But TikTok is a really good place to have a look because there are lots of different things coming up on TikTok, like tutorials. You can be a lot more creative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about jumping on a specific trend that's not going to work for you. Yeah. As I always say, go back to what you do. Think about your audience.
Yeah.
Instagram is another platform that I see used quite heavily. It's visually beautiful. And there's some really nice reels coming up now on Instagram, which obviously is designed to be on the heels of TikTok. They've seen the engagement on video. I'd say for any business, pick two platforms that you feel are going to work best for your demographic and kind of start with those. Don't worry about trying to cover all four or five or however many. Don't think I've ticked that box, and I've ticked the Facebook box, and I've ticked the Instagram, because you have no time to do any engagement.
Okay. How do you choose which are the best two for you in that case?
It's having a look at where you believe your customers are. So if you're very, if you're business to business focused, then obviously LinkedIn is something I'd strongly recommend, or Twitter. If you are something that has customers coming in, you know, cafes, hospitality, shops, then Facebook and Instagram complement that really well.
Is do you want, sorry?
Yeah, please. Please.
Oh, yeah.
is TikTok still an option if, like, you just don't really want your face on the camera all the time?
Yeah, there's lots of videos you can make that don't have to have your face on it, because not many people do sign up straight away and go, I'm going to put my face on this. This is going to be brilliant. I'm so confident with it. There's lots of product-based ones as well, especially with video editing, where you can show the product being displayed differently, the different sort of stages of it. It's really interesting. We start having a look, actually, what options there are. Mm. Yeah, it's not just about doing the Macarena. I don't know why that's the first answer that came into my head. I'm showing my age.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing your version of the Macarena, which clearly is going to be across all social media platforms. But we'll come back to this in a second, but I just think you're picking up on content, Mark. I mean, yeah, what do you think, if you don't have to show your face, what do you think are interesting avenues that people might want to explore?
Well, it's a whole world of, I don't know, it's a bit, right, avenues to explore. Let's have a quick think about this. Similar to what Emma was talking about, is understanding who our audience is, because then what we start to see is just generic noise that we put out there that has no point to it. So if we are a retailer, what can we create? It's always tuning into what our customers are. All right, a good example is to show people what goes on behind the scenes of our businesses. And we're not here to talk about an editorial calendar, but to understand what goes beyond blowing smoke up ourselves, but to look at the role that we serve for other people. Yeah, how we make lives a bit more fun, how we can do things. We don't always have to be telling everyone it's 10% off on Friday. It's how we can start to bring the normal side to everything, because we're forced down a step. We have to be prim and proper on LinkedIn, or we have to be these certain personas of ourselves. But the more normal that we can behave, whether it is advice, whether it is, am I going to up and down voice banging on the table? But it's what can we share? And this is the difficult part. What can we share that tunes into our audience? And it comes down to knowing who our audience is. And that's the really tough part sometimes, is knowing all these people that buy from us. Well, how can we reach out to these people so we're not invading their time on email or something else? Here we go again, because that becomes purely transactional. But how can we find a way where we can keep, as Emma picked up on, how we can keep a conversation going, but how can we tap into our audience and figure out the things that they are interested in, where there are little gaps in the market that we can serve? And that is where there is a huge opportunity.
Mm. Emma, do you see that? Do you kind of try doing things like taking what Mark's saying, but actually, I don't really know what's going to be the answer. Is it like A-B testing? Do you try doing the same type of thing, but maybe a little bit different, or two completely different approaches, and putting them out there and going, well, let's see which one the audience responds to?
Yeah, I don't believe it's as binary as here is some chalk and here is some cheese, and which one do you want? Okay. And then there is your definitive answer. Social media is test and measure. So try it. If it doesn't work, try it slightly differently, or try this. Go slightly out your comfort zone. It should be forever evolving, and you should just be remaining close to who you are, your business and your values. Don't try and be someone else, because the reason that they come to you is because you're not someone else.
Okay.
Can I pick up on that as well?
Yeah.
And it is to, I tap the table.
Yeah, you can come up on it as long as you stop hitting the table.
Is, you were just saying about pushing outside of our comfort zone, but we stick to mediums that we're happy with. Yeah. For instance, somebody may be more comfortable writing, or someone may be a bit more of a gregarious individual, so we can film and video and whatever it is, a glimpse behind the scenes. Mm. Or wherever someone is inquisitive about how we use audio and how we use podcasting and how we have a voice. It's just tuning in to put, well, I think we can push ourselves, but within media that we can be comfortable with, because there's nothing worse. Mm. Then we say, right, we're going to do videos now, and here's our tutorial, and I'm not the most comfortable person, and I feel nervous, and I've spent a ton of money on someone to come and film it all that costs thousands upon thousands of pounds. But it, all I've got out of it is me looking wooden in front of a camera to do a corporate video.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo!
So you were saying about measuring, which sounds really important, but what do you actually measure? If you do these things, how do you... What's the gauges by which you know whether your wooden or unwooden performance might be deemed a success?
Engagement with your post, what you're putting out. Who's liking it, who's hearting it, who's laughing at it, who's going, this is great, we never knew this.
Yeah.
Thinking about using video on something that you're not comfortable with, a really good example is like a behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, a day in the life of, and it hasn't got to be, here's me talking to the camera. It could be a mix of showing you how we decide what we're going to be putting out next. Here's a picture of the team. People are always going to want to buy from people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why these communities exist so well, and that's why it's been strengthened so much during the pandemic. So show yourself within your social media, mm-hmm. so people know who it is they're going to come in and meet. But don't feel like just because you've seen someone do this brilliant, you know, video on Reels, that you think that's just not me.
Yeah.
You don't need it to be. But maybe go 5% out of what you'd normally do.
Can I just say beyond, sorry, Karen, Jamie,
that's all right.
Getting all excitable, and that's what you want, isn't
it? Yeah, no, exactly, yeah.
I think what I was going to say is, I guess what might be the case is things that you do behind the scenes, because it's your job, it's your business, and you do it day in, day out, you might not actually think that people will find it that interesting, but you might find that there is actually a huge audience of people that find it interesting.
Well, while they were talking, I was reminded of the person you introduced me to, who was the train spotter.
Francis Bourgeois.
Oh, I mean,
look at he's got, you know.
So, sorry, say the name again.
Francis Bourgeois.
Okay, so tell us about Francis Bourgeois.
So he's a train spotter, and all he really did was basically do videos of him watching trains go by, and he'd have this GoPro on his head. I say he's still here, he's doing really well. He's got like massive deals now, and he has this GoPro on his head, and it just gives this hilarious angle of him. And when a train goes past and it honks its horn or whatever you call it at him, he just like has this amazing infectious laugh.
Yeah.
And everyone absolutely went wild for it.
Yeah.
But I think that what was going through my mind when I was saying that just now, though, there's a YouTube channel that I watched. We're going to go down some weird... no, we're not. So there's...
I'll pull this back for you.
There's a YouTube channel I watched called Salvage Rebuilds UK, which I'm sure lots of... guys like me probably have watched it as well. I told my dad about it, and turned out he already watched it. And it's basically about these guys that run a garage where they basically get cars that have like for salvage, and then they rebuild it and make a profit on it. And I watched hours of these, just like really fascinated by it. And you think, no one else has done this before. Because people that do that job probably think, well, I'm just fixing cars, who's going to be interested in that? But they've got hundreds of thousands of followers.
Mm.
So it's about finding the little gems in what you do. And because you do them, you love them. But actually, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. But there's an audience out there, which is what you're saying. So I suppose that kind of brings into another thing where, because you have a physical building, you tend to look around your immediate vicinity. And then what we've been talking about is actually maintaining that relationship with the people who are your customers, but who are acting in a slightly different way from the how they have been before.
Yeah.
But actually what you're describing now is an opportunity to start expanding and gaining a much bigger level of audience, which is not right for everybody, but there is that opportunity there if people want to start thinking about it. But rather than going, right, I'm going to be... huge now. It's more in terms of just trying to find out what your niche is. So let's come back to H6, BH6 even. That if you are H6, that's a pencil, that's a whole different thing. So if you come back to BH6, then your passion might be, I don't know, PG Woodhouse, let's say. And then if you started looking at it, you'll find there's actually loads of other people around who are PG Woodhouse fanatics as well.
Yeah.
And so if you can start to engage with them, but not devoting your whole life to it, it's because you've still got a shop to run. You still want to be able to try and... But kind of, if you're passionate about it, you will find other people who've got a passion, who didn't even necessarily know they had that passion. But then that comes back into what you were talking about and kind of measuring. I was also interested just in terms of talking a little bit about targeted promotion and marketing and advertising and AdWords and things like that, because there's the whole social media side. But we still have, what, 80% of all searches go through Google. So so if you want to be found, you can game the system by buying some AdWords, and if you're very precise about what those words are, you matching that in with what you're saying about looking at who's actually buying the stuff in the back end, then, I mean, how does that work? How do you try and dip a toe in the water for doing that?
So Facebook advertising is incredibly sophisticated. It's very incredibly user-friendly as well. It's very intuitive where you work through it. It's good to always use things that you know are going to be well engaged with. So you're not going to sit down for your first time, go, I'm going to run a Facebook ad. I've never done it before. I'm going to use an image I've never used before. I don't know anyone will like. And I'm going to use some copy that I've never used before. And
Target everyone.
I want people in Milton Keynes to see this, because it's not going to be relevant. So always keep it relevant. The entire thing, the main theme I always find is keep it relevant to yourselves. There's so many things that we can use with Facebook advertising. Have a look on there and look at the options and how much you can really draw down on that audience, that your interests, likes, hobbies, where they live, age.
Can I just highlight that? Sorry to jump back in.
Yeah, please.
This is where the danger is, right? So you just said it, like 80%. So all we're spending money on is Google and Facebook, which is fine. It's all part and parcel. We all do it. But it's also super dangerous, because that's what we become reliant on. And we start to become dogs fighting over a bone. SEO, that's all what starts to happen, is that, and if we don't know anybody, that's the tax on us by trying to reach out to everybody. So listen, I use social, everything else is part and parcel. It's more reach than anything else. But if the topic of discussion is around retail and what's happening today, then there's now a rallying call for how we can build something and start to be self-sufficient instead of being so reliant. And I know with social media you've got to do that. I'm not like, come on, Mark, it's getting late in the day. I don't know where to start. Don't have an argument. I've had a long, off day today. But it's when, because I realised a few years ago I was wasting money. I was just throwing money. Listen, I worked with somebody as good as your side that knows what to do. For many of us, we don't know, because many of us, we don't have that budget. So we put our money in these pots. So Facebook don't care about our businesses, Google don't care about our businesses, but we become reliant, over-reliant on them, because that's the space. Look, you know, the good old days, oh God, I was showing my age, Yellow Pages and places such as that. So I'm a huge believer in how we can actually build something that we can get people on our side, and it's not about knowing everybody, because then it's just about volume, and that's fair enough. But how we can build that dialogue with other people, you talk about people responding to our posts and everything else that we do, and that to me is where engagement is. That's where the return is. That's the measurement of those people that comment. Imagine that one email that comes back from that person that says, that was awesome, thanks very much for that, as well as the conversion in terms of what we can sell on top of, rather than looking at all the people that liked our stuff, how we can close that net and bring people into us so we can have that conversation. That's what it is. That's the old-fashioned things. There's a place today. Now we're back at year zero again.
So how do you start kind of thinking about that? So in terms
I'm very
of,
glad you are.
Well, where does it start? So if you start to think about, you know, nurturing your audience, you talk about that in terms of growing loyalty, maybe helping that lead to repeat business. Where's the starting point in thinking, okay, this is the strategy I need?
Collect people's emails. To me, it is. I've built my whole businesses around, we put a lot of effort into the content that we create, but something times that we forget is the outreach that needs to be done. Okay, so imagine that. So if you're a pub or a wholesaler, whatever it is, that ability, the ease to get somebody's email and then use that as a means to build a dialogue. So that's when I talk about self-sufficiency, is how we can then start to, when we start to own the audience, is the thing that starts to become empowering. But it's what we do with that audience that goes beyond 10% off Fridays. How we can then maintain that dialogue. That's how social backs it all up with what we're trying to say in terms of credibility, in terms of rapport that we can build. But the way that we can reach out to people individually, and there are ways that we can do it, how we collect emails, and then how we reach out to those people in a way that isn't just selling product and services.
Have you got some examples of ways that you can do it just beyond the kind of bog standard newsletter or
any of that? Well, the thing that listen, I'm a big fan because that's the way I've made it work, is via the newsletter.
Well, sorry, I mean bog standard newsletter, you know, the old kind of format. Obviously, I've seen yours is great. You know, you've got all that engagement there. It's just kind of.
You mean the format that we use, the kind of the old-fashioned one, which is.
They were great tools, but it's really good tools. But there's the thing: there are really good tools out there that are free.
Yeah.
Like MailChimp doesn't cost. You can, if you've got under 2,000 subscribers, that's free. Utilize it. So there are good places out there to try and to get used and to hone your craft before you go all in. And they're out there. Rather than thinking it has to be £500 a month that goes into this particular pot here, it's all about seeing what is out there that doesn't have a huge dent on our pockets and our businesses, where we can be resourceful. Whether it's an individual that is built around somewhere like Substack, this is an email platform, a newsletter platform, because it's a huge thing that's happened at the minute with emails. Or, using places such as MailChimp, because we can create landing pages, and we can bring people to us, and we can create, and it doesn't look as nice as paying somebody to create this, but it's still a starting place for us all, not for us all, but for those retailers and those companies that are trying to do something that you want to push that has more of that digital slant to it.
So if you're using the email address, how are you using that? How often are you using that? What are you trying to sort of put across in there? What do you expect the response to be? And I suppose, you know, given that there are people who are doing perfectly well without using email, is it almost like, do you see that it depends on who you are and what your business is? I was just thinking, is there almost like a scoring metric for the score of the value of the interaction you have? Coming back to that 17 engagement points that you need to have, are some more valuable than others? And it could be that email works really, really well for you. And in that case, why do you think that is? And if you were, let's say, 10 years younger, do you think it might have gone in a different way because you would have been owning a different space? Or is that particularly relevant to your audience? How do you break that down? How do you understand it?
The way I'd look at that is there has to be a reason for someone to sign up rather than spamming someone. Mm-hmm. So spam to me is just, right, you can even, if someone gets something that they find interest to them, that's great. If it's not, it's spam. So how can you get people on board that are willing to leave their email, who are going to know what they're going to receive, rather than sign up to our newsletter, understanding the content that we're going to share? Say, for instance, if you're a pub or whatever it is, or an independent little space, microbrewery, for instance, look at your regular customers, look at the community you were growing, look at the people that come in and share their stories, their photos, and what's going on there. But there has to be a reason. You have to tell people what you were going to send them, highlight when it's going to be sent. And which is why it comes back to full circle to the beginning. Let's not pretend and we say, when we're like, we're an M&S or whatever retailer, and that retailer says, can I have your email, please? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, what for? Well, it's for our, just for email promotion purposes. It's like, balls to that. No. Mm-hmm. But how can we flip it on its head that may say, look at the way that started to bring things in a much more personal and individual space, where if people are leaving their email, they're getting something of value that may be fun. And all this stuff doesn't have to be just dry. This is still a byproduct to still sell, but we can do it in different ways that shows the humility, that shows what we're trying to do, the people that come in, the photos that people share, all the backstories that goes into what we've done. And there's always a reason for doing it. Whether you are a hardware store, and it may be how to do DIY this over 2 feet high, that kind of thing, and finding ways, and loads of people do it, find ways that is there to help and support people. We can do that. We can still make money from it. It isn't just product placement.
So the content is more, how can we help people, give them things?
And that's the difference between audience and community, I'm finding out at the minute. So audience is how we share content that can help and support people, right? Whereas a community is something that's completely different. But an audience is—that's what we can do as small businesses and retailers and whatever and the sector that we're a part of—is how we can share that, because we've got to a place of whatever we started with our hands, or whatever it was to start our business, however many years ago, and it's that privilege that we have now, that we can direct that to somebody else. And if they give permission, I know we have the GDPR stuff and everything else. As long as we're not taking a mick and we're not scraping lists and everything else, and we've all done it. But how can we find a way that someone gives their thumbs up, that what you send them is what is okay? And that comes back to the bricks and mortar place. And that's a brilliant opportunity then, if someone can have your email, because I'm going to, the last Friday of every month, we're going to tell you the stories and the things that happen and around our particular neighbourhood, which is why we need the champions like we mentioned, our Gordon Fongs of this world, because these are the people that rally around other people, because we can't do all this on ourselves, and that's where it's really hard.
So that can be quite a simple thing to do, because you kind of, I'm just thinking, okay, well, what would that be? What would be convincing me to want to give my email details to somebody else?
50% off.
Well, obviously, yeah, that can be a strong motivation.
Let's look at the bookshop idea, the bookshop analogy, and that's a valid thing. Look, why should I bother? Why? Because you're just going to shoehorn something in. And I don't want to do it because it's a one-off purchase. But if you put that effort, same for any business, as if you believe in what you're doing, and there is that little page that has that sign up, if you're explaining to people, or whether there is a reference in the shop or something else, or it's part of the conversation when someone buys, that we share the stories for the under 12s, or we'd have to do split testing, by the way, it's not about all that, or we share our sci-fi monthly, whatever, we'll tell you the best books that are coming in, because we get good books that come in every other Wednesday or something else like that. Can we keep you posted with what's going on? Because we'd love to get involved. Whether it is community events, it doesn't have to be about the industry that we're in. How can we show to people that we are part of the community that would be of interest to somebody else? Who knows? Fates, things that happen in as well. So I have to convince you. So first of all, I have to prove to you that I'm not just going to throw something right under your nose that was the whole purpose of me just trying to sell something to you. The way that we can look at it is how we can start to build an ongoing conversation, and that's the loyalty, the thing that comes into
it
as well.
Relationship element.
Massively.
But there's, I suppose, another thing that if past that, let's say, picking up on that example, that if you're going to be looking at the new books which are coming out in next week or the week after or have just come out, there's still a bit of a salesy element to that. And not to say that that's wrong, because that is going to work in some cases. But I was also interested, kind of picking up on what you were talking about the wreckers of going, well, it could be more personal than that, because people, I think, warm a lot to personal stories more and more. So I was just thinking of the guy who runs my local toy shop, and it would be great for him to go, I love this toy, I love this game, and it may be 50 years old, but I love it because of this, and this is why people come back for it. And just exploring those things so you can start to develop strands and streams. So it doesn't all have to be about the sales, and that, in a way, that's got nothing to do with the selling at all. Although there are some people going, you're absolutely right, I'm blooming well going to go and buy that because I've forgotten how good that game was. So there's that, and it could also be the same way that in a cafe, you know, people love coffee. People love taking shots of how they've made their perfect cappuccino, and it's there's
that
a
is a lovely
market
point.
For it.
Sorry, you're getting me excited, but it's exactly this because this thing you just say there, like for instance about a coffee, and you're inviting people to share, because that's what builds community. How you're inviting other people to share their things they've done. For instance, we're having a new. We're having free bathrooms done. It's cost me an arm and a leg. Gone like £6,000 over. You're making me... It's not funny.
Yeah.
But we went into this. I went to the shop yesterday, and the lady said to me in the tile shop, when it's done, can you share the photos with me? I think, yeah, that's really nice. She was really helpful. They delivered some smash tiles. She said, look, put them around the back. But she was really nice and approachable person that said, look, when you... I thought, yeah, I'll get you a really nice photo because it's new. I'm proud of it. And it's like those kind of elements, whether they will use it or not, but that's where it starts to come into its own little, doesn't it? We start putting that on our Facebook because we're saying, they're with us now. And we can, and that's all believable stuff.
That stuff works really well on e-commerce as well. Probably getting a bit more kind of e-commerce-y now, but if they've got your photo and they put it on their website and they've got underneath there, Mark Masters absolutely loves his bathroom, even though it was £6,000 over, then that there is perfect social proof.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know, I'm going to pay for this
guy. Yeah, it was worth every penny of the extra year I'm going to have to work to pay it off. But
are we going to mention them like BH6? Or?
Yeah.
Come here for a barrel.
But to be honest, I mean, you can remind me of another example. So I'm converting a van into a camper van at the moment, and I don't know why I took this enterprise on. It's a lot of work.
You're still not finished that.
Still not finished. it's my own little fourth bridge. But trying to get my head around how do the electrics of this thing work. This is my biggest fear. I don't really get electrics at all. But so there's somebody from where I bought my solar panel from and just took the time to talk me through it all and got lots of stuff. And then when it came to the point, oh, actually, I need to get a few more bits and pieces. But I want to talk to you because you'll give me reassurance about something that I'm not too sure about. And then I'll definitely buy it from you. And you won't be the cheapest, but I'll absolutely value the fact that you're... You won't be the most expensive either, but I really value the time that you've given me. And I think trying to understand the value that you can offer to people, because we all go around and, because we know our worlds, we think, oh, everyone kind of knows this, but we don't know anybody else's world. So having that help and that reassurance, I think, is incredibly valuable.
Shut up.
No, keep going.
No. The point you say there just puts the emphasis on having people that know their stuff. And particularly within a localized space. And that's the thing, because what you're talking about here is that starts to become the differentiator in these little places that we work and everything else, is the knowledge that we share, the openness that we have, and how we make people feel welcome, because that's the reason we will go back. It comes back to Waterstone shutting down and then going to see a couple of people. I know that they were the owners of where I went to get books. And what they shared was come from, like, similar to your project as well. It comes from the heart. That's what somebody's interest and someone's knowledge. And that's something that we can't take for granted, as the online is gobbling everybody up that can be done at a click. Whereas what we've got now is someone can, maybe that's a craft that's being lost. It's his ability to talk to someone who has experience and knowledge that puts trust and faith in the product and what we're buying to make us go back again and again and again.
So we probably need to wrap up because we've hit our time. But before we do, I was just wondering, is there something that you've been involved with, Emma, where you think this is a really good example of this, or this was a really bad example of this? Something that you think this is the sort of thing that people should do more of or definitely do less of?
Consistency is something I say to everybody. Apply consistency to it, because you could craft the most beautiful Facebook advert and you could get everything you want on it, but actually when you're sending people to that page, what are they seeing when they get there? What they should see is you, your world, your experience, your community, what's local to you. So when you're posting, if I have someone that says, look, I can't post on Facebook twice a day every day, I can't do it, you don't need to. But don't do 10 times 1 week, one time another week, 10 times 1 week. Have some consistency with it, because then people will know when you're going to be there. They know when you're going to turn up and they know what you're bringing to the table. So, yeah, I find that's the key thing.
That's
and it's
really
the same
good.
With
yeah.
email as well, actually, when the people know they're going to get your email.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I get Mark's email.
Yeah, I
and,
do.
And
yeah, me too.
We all get Mark's email.
It's got
and
everyone's
then,
email.
And it arrives on the Thursday morning, and it does two things. There's one that's going, oh, there could be something interesting in here. And the other is, it means it's Thursday, and I've got to put the recycling bins out. So it's an alarm system for me at the same time.
No. I will take it. But can I just say, backing up with you, saying consistency, I just want to back this up, what Emma's talking about here. And there's this thing around, like, good is good enough. Because sometimes if we're creating something, like we're creating a good advert or whatever it is we're putting out to a piece of content that we're going to share, we can spend far too long hankering to be the most professional sounding person on video, which we will never, ever be. If Emma talks about consistency, then we have to make sure that the clock is always ticking every week, every month, to what we need to send out. It's okay. We don't have to be presenters that are ready for BBC. We don't have to be a J.K. Rowling person when it comes to writing. But we have to set ourselves a timer and this thing of consistency and persistence and always deliver when we say we're going to deliver.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Because we can't be resourceful. Yeah. Canva and all this other stuff that we don't have to spend. Oh, pack it on.
Yeah. Before I wrap up, just to say, if there is any questions on the group, there haven't been any, but this is the last moment. Post your question now and we'll squeeze that in before we finish.
The worst bit.
What?
Silence. When it's like, hey, any questions?
No. I'm just saying that's it, because it's going to finish very soon. And if you don't ask a question now, you're going to lose a chance, because now I'm going to turn to Jamie and just say, yeah, I know exactly what, I thought my time was done. What's going on? But no, the same for you. Just is there one thing that you pick up on that you think, actually, that's really important to do, or don't do that, because I've seen that fail multiple times.
I'd say the best thing to do is when you are building an e-commerce website, particularly on the product page, what you need to be thinking about is what are all the things that people are going to be thinking about that make them not want to buy from you. And they're always the usual things. It's how much is the postage going to cost? It's how long does the delivery take? It's how long is the warranty? It's what's the returns policy? If you just make sure on your product page where people buy their products, you've got all of those questions answered right there next to the buy button, I can't guarantee things. You'll probably see an increase in conversions and purchases.
You'll definitely see an increase.
So that, I mean, but that just comes down to kind of fundamental behavioural science, really, doesn't it? In terms of what people actually want to know.
Yeah.
And so there's all the other stuff which is all kind of fluff and lovely, and it's all about driving things. But if you get the fundamentals kind of uncovered, then that can be a quick turn off as well.
Exactly.
Mark, last word from you. Oh, hold on. Mark mentioned a free newsletter platform, not MailChimp. Missed what it was.
Oh! Why did it? Come on, help me. I've got to remind about the video. Like, I'm screaming. Oh.
Well, there we are. That's our plug.
So it's called, I've gone blank.
We are recording this episode, and it will be going out as a podcast on the 10th Story podcast, and will also be on the Silicon South website in the innovation section. Still thought? We'll post
type
that.
Type in news. Oh, why have I gone blank? Type in newsletter platform. I wish I could get my phone out, but I don't want to look professional.
Well, you may as well. Last word.
If it's an audio, then go for broke.
Okay. Have you got a last thought?
My last thought is this whole thing around presence. And that we're talking about today, and it's tough out there, and we need to be seen, but sometimes we don't need to recognise that we have to jump on every bandwagon, every vanity metric that's out there. We don't need, our audience, honestly, is a lot less than we probably think that we need to have. So rather than thinking that we have to accept that we have to get tens of thousands of views for what we put out there, isn't necessarily the case. So it's just this ability that we can build, that we can create something, that we can build a dialogue and bring people a little bit closer into our little world, because it feels good when people say hello and people say a thank you. Hmm. And if we can do it to face, it's worth its weight in gold.
Okay. Was it Mail or Light?
No, that's one of
them. Mail Up. Mail Jet.
Oh, I like this.
Moose End. Those are all the ones I found.
However, listen, there are lots of good platforms that are out there. If you're an individual, it's up us out.
Right, well, we will definitely post that one out. So we will have a look, and we will post that on our social media to give a valuable service of what we have got. Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much. Thank you very much to Mark and to Emma and to Jamie. And and to you for tuning in, and so we will be doing the fourth series in these episodes on the 30th. I believe Mark has got an answer.
Substack.com.
Substack. So not with an M, it's with an S. So Mark's very happy about it. So Substack.com. So we'll be doing another one of these again back in the chocolate box, and we're going to be exploring kind of very much a kind of Bournemouth theme, looking around. You know, that a lot of people are struggling to employ well, to find the right people to work with, and what we want to do is to really push what Bournemouth has. There is so much, and we're exploring a little bit of this at the moment, but around the businesses that work here as well, and exploring what we can do in order just to kind of keep raising the profile of what we have here. So that's going to be on the 30th. And any questions, please do come in and have a look at the posts and the video and post them there. And we'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much. Thank you, panelists. It has been brilliant. So thank you for Sonia as well. Thanks very much. Pleasure. Bye.
Shall I wave at something?
You can wave if you like. The camera here.